Catch the NBA playoffs on Sling TV, the most flexible live TV streaming service, putting consumers in control to watch games their way with flexible subscriptions. Want to catch one game or a full series on ESPN? Grab a 1, 3, or 7-day pass. If you want to catch as many games as possible, get a monthly subscription with our ABC, NBC, and ESPN combo package. Either way, Sling lets you watch the playoffs your way with no long-term contracts. Learn more at sling.com.
Good Friday, everybody. Welcome in. Chase and Big Joe in for Robbie and Rex Road today. They are doing the afternoon show in for Jared Stillman. 102.5, 106.3, the game. He's Big Joe Dubin. I'm Chase McCabe. Nick Keyser with us as well. Usually you can find us 9 to 11 weekdays here on 102.5, 106.3, the game. But Jared was like, hey, I'm taking the day off. Is that cool? I go, yeah. Robbie and Joe will fill in for you. And so it all worked out.
Yeah, it worked out perfectly.
Paul Kaharski going to be with them as well. So it will be PK joining Robbie and Rextro this afternoon from 2 to 6. So
oh, all 4 hours.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. So that should be entertaining.
It's going to be like that scene in Monsters, Inc. where Sully goes and the girl screams and he fills up his little whatever, his energy thing. And
oh, yeah.
So the amount of screaming and yelling this afternoon will be, in a good way, will be fun. So Sully will be able to fill up his energy pack on after the first segment to do that.
Polly will be able to do that.
Polly, there we go. Yeah, Monsters,
Stilly,
Inc.
Stilly and Polly. That's
Stilly and
that's
Polly.
What everybody wants the afternoon show to be. And I'm like,
Stilly and Polly.
I got enough gray in my beard right now.
Oh, I think about Polly from The Sopranos. All right, our question this morning, you guys have been great. What's the worst sports injury you've ever suffered? The worst sports injury you've ever suffered? Let us know, 615-737-1025. You can text, you can call. We'd love to hear from you. Some of these that have rolled through are really good. You guys are great. 7429 says, when I was in eighth grade, I was the smallest kid on the team, football team. For the reason, the coach thought it would be a good idea to try me out at running back. He had me run the Oklahoma drill against the only girl on the team. I'm not trying to be rude, but she was really hefty girl going against 90-pound me. After tackling me, she fell in the back of my leg and broke my tibia in two pieces and my fibula in four pieces. I was in a wheelchair for 8 months. 7429, if this is a true – Matt from Dover. Matt, if that's a true story, my Lord. You got laid out in an Oklahoma drill by a girl. That's fantastic.
I love that.
By the way, the Oklahoma drill has made more basketball players than any other drill out there.
Because they quit football.
Because they quit football. That Oklahoma drill is brutal.
Is the Oklahoma drill still a thing?
Probably not, because a lot of football has been watered down. I hope it is somewhere. Hope there's some.
For those that may not know, what is the Oklahoma drill?
You lay down 5 yards apart, 7 yards apart from somebody else on your back, and they lay on their back, and you blow a whistle, and you get up. Somebody's got the football. If you got the football, you're trying to get past the guy or girl, and if you don't, you're trying to tackle the one, and it just
– it's in a circle, right?
Like, well, you're laying down. That's called bull in the ring.
Oh, bull
in the ring is where they call out, you know, chase, and you go you got to turn around. That also – made a lot of basketball players from that drill. With the Oklahoma drill, you stand up and you
go. And then you go to basketball and you do the Kentucky layup drill. You know that one?
No.
So our coach used to do that where, like, if he was just, you know, if we weren't shooting well, and it's a fundamental drill that Adolph Rupp came up with. Basically, the entire team runs up and down the court until the coach says stop shooting layups. But you got to keep running. So you're going from one end of the court to the other, just shooting layups.
So you have
to dribble the ball down the court, shoot the layup, get your own rebound, dribble it down the other end, shoot the layup, get your own rebound, and just keep going.
When do you stop? When he tells you to?
When he tells you to stop.
Goodness, man. That's a lot that goes on right there. The Oklahoma Matt, another Matt says the Oklahoma drill is now banned. I don't know if it's banned or not, but I know a lot of coaches.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's one of those that might be.
Don't do that. Also, like the when I was playing the three on this, we did this in college, like the 3-on-3 and a running back at the goal line, and the running back had to run between the guy. He couldn't run outside to run between, and he would just whip your guy's butt and lay the running back out, or he'd whip your butt and you get spun around, and the running back would blast you. Either way, great memories, man. Great memories.
William from Dover, I'm 34 and have played sports my whole life with no injuries. I tore my ACL and MCL playing wiffle ball with a bunch of kids at a 10-year-old girl's birthday party back in May.
Oh, William, I'm so sorry,
oh,
man.
That's awesome.
9637, when I was in my 30s, played flag football one time without any stretching or warming up. I punted the football just for fun. Ended up pulling a groin muscle. My inner thigh was the deepest purple I've ever seen. That's Tom in Brentwood. Tom, I'm sorry about that, man.
Oh,
you got it. That's you got to stretch and you got to kick. You got to stretch because you're 50. You got to stretch, Tom. Sorry about that.
Oh, that's funny.
Good times, man.
This is Mark. Did we read this one already? Mark in the Borough. First college baseball game as a freshman. During pregame infield, the ball took a bad hop and hit me in the face. Five of my upper teeth went through my lip. Ow, I got 7 stitches and a bucket of blood. Never forgot my first game.
Corey says, I was playing one of those big inflatable joust things where you stand on a pedestal and try to knock the other person off with a big soft Q-tip looking things. I fell off backwards, ended up with a Jones fracture like Derrick Henry's. Ow.
Ouch.
Okay. Well, that's a good thing.
Brent from Portland. Little League Baseball, I slid head first into second base and broke my right ring finger into the game. And coach made all of us run 2 laps around the field. Finally got home and went to bed, and my mom tried to straighten out my finger. It didn't work. Next morning, I was in a cast looking like Mort from Mort and Mindy.
Anthony says, my son is 7. They ran Oklahoma drills for a whole hour their first day in pads at a Mount Pleasant Little League. Yeah, I pulled him out of that real quick. Yeah, 7 is a little too young to be doing that. I had a guy one time, I needed – to play softball, we played at Two Rivers, you need 10 on a softball team, but you could play with 9. You just got to take that extra out when he comes to bat. So I coaxed a guy I worked with. I said, you need to come out and play softball. I need a second. He's like, I'm terrible. I said, I just need a body. Make it 9 people. You play second base. Nobody hits the ball there. So he gets up to bat. His first time at bat, he hits it, and he's running. He's running in work boots. And he goes around first base. I'm like, I said, don't run. So he gets it for a single. Next time at bat, he does it again, gets a hit. So he thought he'd be Pete Rose. And he went to second base. He slid in, and he ripped his ACL.
Oh.
And he laid there screaming. And I was like, oh, man, I am so sorry. And then we had to call an ambulance to come get him.
Jeez.
And I was like, this is your fault. I'm like, probably is, but you know,
you were the one that decided to be Pete Rose, Hustle.
That's why I said slide head first. Don't go in.
Yeah,
with
Pete Rose would go head first.
Right. So it was something else. But one more. Stephen Clarksville High School, dislocated knee in football, separated shoulder in baseball the next year. A dislocated knee to me sounds worse than an ACL, although it's not. It just sounds like, oh, you dislocated your knee. It just sounds worse.
Let's go to the phones, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Mike has an injury story. Mike, what's up?
Hey, guys. Man, what's crazy about this is I played rugby in high school, and I played football, and I never suffered any injuries until I played softball, like regular softball. I was sliding into a base, and I completely just wrecked my entire ankle. High ankle sprain, but it was like torn tendons. My ankle's never been the same since. And it was all just from sliding into a stupid base playing recreational softball, man.
That exactly right. Does it still hurt?
Oh, yeah. It's never been the same. It's still got some, like, scar tissue down there. It's never been the same ever since then, man.
Yeah. That'll teach you for going for the extra effort, Mike. Thanks for the call, brother.
Thanks, Mike.
And speaking of Mike, Chase, what's up next?
Mike Organ from the Tennessean. He has covered sports in Nashville since, the Nixon administration?
I mean, he's been around a while. I'm thinking Coolidge.
Coolidge, yeah. He's been around for a long time. We'll talk some history and talk some what's next for Nashville with Mike Organ. We'll do that next. Chase and Big Joe in for Robbie and Rex Road today, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Chase and Big Joe in for Robbie and Rex Road today, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. He's Big Joe Dubin. Nick Keyser with us. I'm Chase McCabe, and pleased to have Mike Organ from the Tennessean here with us. I think now's the time we can call Rex Road and wake him up. That could be fun. Mike, what's up?
I'd like to call him. I'd like to be the one to call him if it's okay with you.
He'd be all groggy. Nah, he's got teenagers, so I have a feeling he had to get them to school. So
I'd like to go on the record saying that I did not approve Mike Organ in studio. So if we could put that in the official record for Congress.
Okay. You were the one that called him.
I'd like to go on the record and say that I was on my way here and heard all the recruiting, the lowdown on recruiting, and was wondered where if Bill King was going to be on with me. You couldn't get Bill to come on, and you had to settle for me.
College football.
Oh, I want to ask you, we got to get to a wide range of topics because it's story time with Local Mike. All the new people that have moved to town here and everything, that's why I love to have you on. I'm going to ask you first, we'll get into all the fairgrounds discussion that Chase wants to talk about, which is really important to what's happening. But you did something about 12 years ago. You started this NIL page on Facebook, National Interscholastic League, which you've now have got thousands of members in there. And I just want to commend you because what it's done, Mike, it's brought together old teammates, old coaches, old rivalries, pitchers, I mean, in a fun way. I'm mad I didn't think about it that you went and started it, but it's been a blessing to so many people.
I was just sitting one night. You're right, it was 2010, so it was going on 13 years. And I thought, you know, I wonder if there's anybody from the old NIL, National Interscholastic League. It used to be the two districts, 11 and 12 in Nashville, west side of the river and east side of the river were the two districts. And I wondered if there was anybody out there on Facebook that would, you know, want to reunite. So I just created a page. And within about a year, we were about 2,000 members. We're now going on 10,000 members.
Right.
Once it took off, I thought, well, this will be nice. This will last a few years because after a couple of years, it'll die off because all the people will die because they're all, you know, the NIL ended in 1984.
Yeah.
One morning, Wes Elrod from McGavock called Larry, called the Tennessee, and Larry Woody answered the phone. It was in August of 1984, and he said, hey, the NFL, the NIL is no more. And Woody sat down and wrote a 12-minute story, and that was the end of the NIL, which had started in 1933.
Wait, I didn't know that. I was with Wes Elrod at McGavock in August of 84.
Were you really?
Yeah.
I didn't even put that two and two together. So, yeah, he just called, and he and Pig and a bunch of them from Hunter's Lane at the time and Bubba from Stratford, they all got together. And there just was so much expansion and other young private schools coming in, and they weren't playing everybody wasn't playing each other anymore. Right. So they just decided to stop having it. So it unceremoniously ended on that morning.
Like those sissies from FRA trying to get into the NIL, right?
Stay away. The FRA was in the NIL. BGA was a charter member.
Really?
They don't realize that. Yes, Father Ryan. As far as I can trace back, Father Ryan was, I think, one of the very first, back with Litton and West and a lot of schools that aren't existing anymore. But as private schools came in, they were brought in too, but those two private schools were charter members. So it was not just a public schools things like a lot of people think. It was, like I said, BGA, FRA, Donaldson Christian got in.
Yeah.
You will not besmirch the good name of Franklin Road.
But I just think it's a great thing because, you know, I went to the Hume Award and, you know, reunited with some coaches, Mike Tribune and Scott Burnett, coaches that meant the world to me. But what it's more than that is for a lot of us that still live here, you know, we think so many people have moved in here. But there's a lot of me, you, and Chase who grew up here and knew this and loved these old coaches and schools and the history and everything. You know, my brother went to McGavock. My mom went to West. I mean, it was to see all that stuff. It's a walk down memory lane that's invaluable.
Yeah, and it's the original NIL, I want to say. I can't believe that another NIL came in and took us over.
Damn name.
Image likeness. Yes. But no, because when I bring it up now with a lot of young people, they're like, what in the world are you talking about?
Yeah, so, I love it, man.
But it does. It thrives. And you know, we get 20, 30 members a day, which is just it's great. Still to this day, they were still expanding.
Well, and for somebody like me that, you know, the NIL was gone before I was born, it's still cool to learn about, like, the history because, you know, you bring up FRA. Like, I used to walk through the hallways and see all the old pictures of, you know, the early teams and George Weicker, you know, rest his soul, the longtime coach at FRA, played for the First Sounds team. Coach baseball too. I mean, like, so learning all of
Sterling
these
Ambrose.
Yep, great. Sterling Ambrose. Yeah, but learning all these, you know, just this history of my city that I grew up in is very, very cool to me.
Yeah, you can go on there, and there's thousands and thousands of pictures on there now, and you can just type in search, you know, your mom's or dad's school or whatever, and any mention of that school or any photo or graphic or anything comes up, and you can spend hours on there. And just a lot of people think that it's just what's on that front page, and there I get a lot of comments, and usually it's from the older guys, like, what about East High? Why don't we have anything from East High? And I'm like, just type in East and see what.
I remember that guy. Yes. Yeah. He went on and said, there's nothing on Eastern. You're like, yeah. So I typed in, and there was like 8,000 pages on East High School that happened over there. Chase, let's do this now. Chase wants to get into you about a subject that's dear to you and dear to him.
Yes. Right? Yes, it is. And we'll, you know, have to take some time on this, but the fairgrounds. A lot with that. NASCAR was here last week for the awards. And what's funny is just about every driver that came over to my table, you know, would either on the air or off the air go, hey, what's the latest with the fairgrounds? Like, they all have an invested interest. And I mean, some are more vocal than others. Dale Jr. was here. And you know, it's a tough subject because it's one of those things that, okay, we thought it was good, thought it was going to happen, and then it kind of gets pushed back. And then, you know, maybe it's not going to happen. You got a new mayor. You got the soccer team that's against it. I mean, there's just a lot of different layers to it. What have you heard?
Yeah, it's become very, very political. And like you said, the soccer team doesn't want it there. There's a move to make it for an urban development, maybe affordable housing below that. The latest thing was something about an electric car race to take place there along with the drag strip, which there's not quite enough room there for a drag strip and a runoff. But I had lunch yesterday with a bunch of people from the a bunch of former racers, Gary Neal, who works at the fairgrounds now, mm-hmm. Ham, James Ham, a former NASCAR driver, and it's just all still, you know, in limbo, and it has been for a long time now, way too long. The opposition continues to move it back. If one side starts getting momentum, well, if the fairground side starts getting momentum on the council and with the mayor, then the opposition has managed to move it back and back. And so now we have a new council and the new mayor. It goes back on the docket for the council for in 24. We were talking yesterday. We're not sure when it goes on. If it's in, it will be at some point in the first quarter. We know that. And it's already
and
been
the new
approved.
Mayor. I mean, I don't think he wants it.
But who owns the land?
The city.
Okay.
The city, yes, and it's owned by Metro, and it costs Metro to run it. It runs in the black, so I mean in the red. So no, good or bad,
black's bad. Good.
Black. It runs in the red.
Okay,
and it costs the
and they haven't put money into it. Hardly.
No, they've done nothing. All they do is pay to keep it up, for what the bare necessities. But the proposal from Bristol is to, I think that Bristol guarantees that they will pay $1 million if it doesn't make a certain amount that they, you know, they're
guaranteed. It's a no-brainer.
Yeah, so you take off a debt and make it an asset. And but it's
and
not
like $75 million in repairs and. I mean, the renderings out there, it looks beautiful. I mean, these are the
incredible
folks that run Bristol and run the Nashville Super Speedway. I mean, they do it right. They don't mess around.
Yeah, when Bristol gets involved, you know, I was in a meeting once with Jerry Caldwell, and I asked him, I said, is Bristol bigger than NASCAR? Because I've heard it is. And he said no, but it's pretty big. And if you want to have a drag strip, they have more drag strips than anybody in the country.
Sure.
Bristol does. So.
Well, they could put one of those out in Lebanon.
Yeah.
If they wanted to.
Yeah, if you want to do that, yeah. But
which I think was a plan at one time.
It was.
When Dover owned it. But
it was.
But it keeps getting delayed. Now, the new mayor, Chase, I have been told, you know, I thought he was against it also. But from the people I've talked to so far, they like the new they like the reception they've gotten from the new mayor.
He's
been open-minded is what I've been told.
I guess I should say that it's not that he's necessarily against it. It's just I know he's kind of looked at it as I want to now kind of reset now that I'm in this and look at the plan.
He wants to slow things down, I think, in Nashville with all this explosive growth, which has made it a city that the three of us don't recognize a lot of times.
But
he wants to kind of slow that down, pump the brakes. And, you know, he's got a $2.1 billion football stadium,
sure.
$1.2 billion football stadium that he was against.
Right.
So he's got to deal with that along with trying to get this going. So that's, I think that's his hesitation.
But there's a point on that that I want to make when we come back. But real quick, Dave wants to give an NIL story. Dave, what's up?
Hey, thanks, guys. Thank you again for this Facebook page. It's been great. But I'm a Madison grad back in the 70s with, you know, Lonnie Sadler and Cookie Williams, some of those guys, and Glenn Smalley. And funny thing, they had an NIL checklist, which was really exciting because you would see on a weekly basis they'd recognize players' performance by position. And we were all excited to see it each week. Well, one week we played East, and I was on it. And I was like, and I was a mediocre player. But what was so funny, the Sunday we watched film, and a well-known coach at Madison, Larry Overby, who I love, he told me, he said, you were on the NIL list, but do you realize you blocked the wrong person the whole flipping game? And I thought that was so funny, and it just made my day. But it was, I tell that story forever. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Well, a correction should have been run, Dave. They should have come back and said Dave was not should not have been included on the NIL list. The NIL list, what he's talking about, was really cool. It was like the end of the season, like All-Metro list or whatever, but it was done each week. It was like keeping a running All-City team, and it would change from week to week because it would be, like he said, by position by position.
Nice. He is Mike Organ of the Tennessee, and he's going to be with us the rest of the hour. I have another thought on the fairgrounds and what you said about the city expanding and growing and maybe slowing that down. We'll discuss that more next. Take your calls and texts on our phone and text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Chase and Big Joe in for Robbie and Rex Road today, 1025-1063 The Game. Chase and Big Joe in for Robbie and Rex Road today, 1025-1063 The Game. They'll be on with Paul Kaharsky 2 to 6 this afternoon as they fill in for Jared Stillman. Hanging out with Mike Organ of the Tennessean and talking about the fairgrounds, and we'll get into some other things with Nashville. But you know, you made the point of Mayor O'Connell looking at this as, okay, the city has grown so much in the last 5-10 years. I mean, we've seen it just skyrocket. Is it going too fast? And maybe slow it down a little bit. My thing on that is, yes, it is, but the Fairgrounds Speedway, that's been here.
Right.
And that's what I you know, and everybody's like, well, the soccer stadium's there. It needs parking. And they could tear it down and put parking there. That's great. It was there first. You know, everybody that lives over in that area, you decided to move next to a racetrack.
Right.
You know, that's – it was there first. It's been there since the early 1900s. Like, it has been around a long time. So I feel like that because of it, and it's a historic landmark, that Metro hasn't kept it up like they, you know, said they would. And I think everybody's just been basically like, okay, we'll just ignore it. And then eventually it'll get where it's in so much disrepair that it'll fall down and we'll tear it down and then we can move on.
It's not going to do that. And you're right.
Because there's people that won't allow it.
Yes, exactly. And there's money behind it now, too. You've got Scott Borchetta. You've got Gary Baker. You've got some people that are going to keep this alive until the very end. And you've got Bristol invested in it. Bristol wants to get it done. I'm surprised Bristol has hung in there like it has. To your first point, I bought a house over in Donelson, not far from here, a couple of miles from here. Second house I bought, and I got a break on it because it was next to the airport.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way things work.
Yeah.
The airport was there before I bought the house.
Right.
I got the house at a cheap price because of the airport, because there was
nice.
You know, 8 to 10 to 15 flights flying over every 4 or 5 hours. And, you know, that's the way, you know, the people that complain about the noise. And on top of that, the noise is going to be reduced because when NASCAR comes in, they're going to put in noise barrier walls
sure.
that are going to take
run
it down.
Muffler, the new car
and
can run
the new
mufflers.
Cars are going to, yes, the next gen cars aren't as loud.
Yep.
As some of those old jalopies that are running over there now. So it's hard to argue for that way. But, yeah, you know, Richard Petty was here. You mentioned some of the people that are for it, Chase Elliott and Chase McCabe. And
same thing.
I almost said Chase McCabe. But, yeah, he and Dale have kind of led the charge. Mm-hmm. But Richard Petty was here to get inducted to the Nashville Fairgrounds Hall of Fame 2 or 3 weeks ago, and he couldn't say enough about how much he thought it was staying. This is the greatest driver in the history of racing, and he suggested making it a landmark. And I was talking to a guy yesterday. He said because if it's a landmark, a historical landmark,
I thought it already was.
I did too, but according to what a guy told me that works there yesterday, because it burned down and was rebuilt, it's not the original structure. That's why that part hasn't worked.
I heard it was something with the roof, because the roof over the grandstands was like the first of its kind, and so the roof has some sort of historical protection, and therefore it protects the whole track.
That's
I don't know if that's true or not.
Make
that's
that call today. Hey, at what point does Bristol say we're done?
That's what I keep asking, and I asked Jerry Caldwell, who is now president of Bristol. He started out as a vice president, and this was kind of his niche. Burton, they put him on.
Bruton wanted this done.
You get it done. It's your project. Well, when Bruton died, he got promoted, and I thought, that's bad news. Because now he's over everything. He's not going to put all his attention into this. Is he going to appoint somebody to take this over? Or are they just going to let it play out? But he's committed to it.
Well, and Marcus Smith, Bruton's son, who now runs Speedway Motorsports, is very committed to it because he knew this was one of his dad's last wishes.
Was to
get racing back here. And real quick, my other thing too is, I am pro Nashville SC. I'm glad they're here. I wish them all the success. John Ingram has done a ton for the city.
Yeah.
But those that supported the Fairgrounds Speedway and everybody with that supported you to get that stadium in the spot that you got that stadium. And now all of a sudden it's like, Ingram's making comments in the paper saying that it doesn't make sense to have two 30,000-seat venues next to each other. Have you ever been to Kansas City? Have you ever been to Cincinnati?
Cincinnati, yeah.
Like, I mean, that stuff happens all the time. You can work together. I understand from his standpoint, wanting his business, like, okay, you want it all. Again, the racetrack was there first. So my thing is work together on this. That's where you lose me when, it's like you got help to get your spot where you're at. And now all of a sudden it's like, just kidding,
Well,
that's a turnoff for me.
And to your point, when soccer came on board in the MLS, I as a sports writer, I thought, hey, wow, this is incredible, because that will solve the problem, because now you're going to have two professional entities working together to handle a parking issue, getting in and out of there, getting onto 440, maybe they'll work out the satellite parking together. So I thought it was a good thing when soccer came in.
Well, racetracks have, they have these things called infields.
And, yes, they do.
When they come in to fix the fairgrounds, that the infield there is kind of like, a bunch of hills, but they're going to flatten that out. And you know what you can do in that infield is you can park cars.
Well, what happens right now is you park in the infield as a member of the media a lot of times to go to soccer games.
Yeah.
They use the infield to.
But that was something when Jerry Caldwell was on with me last a few months ago, he said, one of our plans is we're going to flatten out that infield and we're going to make it accessible for soccer games that people can park, and you could fit close to. I mean, you do it right, you can fit, maybe 1,000 cars?
Oh, 1,000. I was going to say at least 1,000, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so that solves a lot of your problems right there.
Yeah.
By flattening that out and paving it and actually making it a true infield.
Yeah.
I know they park some cars on the racetrack itself right now.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's going to be interesting how it plays out. I thought it would be over by now. I would have thought it would have been over a long time ago. While this was all going on, all of a sudden we get we get NASCAR back in Lebanon, and
has been fantastic.
It has been fantastic, and again, and that's going to be two.
I work for them, so
yeah.
But it truly has.
He has like to say
it's
that.
It has. It has been awesome.
Oh, it's huge. It's
Dale Jr. When I was on the red carpet, I asked him about it, and he goes, "Look, I'll be the first to tell you that I was wrong. I didn't know how it was going to be, and I've done the three races there for NBC, and it's been awesome. And I hope we keep going there." And, he threw in, "I hope we go to the fairgrounds too." But everybody wants to do both.
Yeah. He and Chase both were hesitant. Yeah. Chase was really outspoken about it when it first came. Then he won it, and that kind of changed his the Ally 400.
It gets it going, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so now I got to ask you about, and I teased it earlier, the Jay Cutler story, which is fascinating to me. Jay Cutler played at Vanderbilt 02 to 05. He was a redshirt in 01. But Woody Woodenhofer, and this is a true story because I've talked to Cutler about this, wanted to burn his red shirt in 01. Why? And if this would have happened, Jay Cutler to the NFL, I don't think would have ever happened.
That's a very good point. Woody had been at Vanderbilt now long enough to know the deal. He knew that he was playing with he was up against it.
Yeah, the time was running out.
Yeah, his time was running out, and he also knew that Vanderbilt did not. He might could get 10 to 15 SEC caliber players, but he couldn't have a full roster.
Right.
All right, so he told me one day that they do get a good recruit. I think Jay was a 3-star out of Santa Claus, Indiana, and they bring him in and they redshirt him because Greg Zolman is still there.
Sure.
Left-hand quarterback who had started, been forced into a position. He's still there, and I think Benji Walker's still there from Brentwood Academy. So they can afford to redshirt Jay. Jay's tall and skinny. He's about 6'3", but he's thin. So they redshirt him. Well, about 4 or 5 games into the season, it's just going terribly, as it usually does at Vanderbilt. And Woody comes to me and says, I'm going to move Jay Cutler to defensive back and start him as a safety.
Yeah.
And he told me about
halfway it. Through the season.
What?
And Woody had a knack, and I loved it, but everybody else hated it. The coaches hated it. Woody had a knack for telling me things before he'd tell even the coaching staff. He changed his defensive coordinator at midseason at one point and told me before he told the defensive backs coach who became the coordinator, but he didn't tell the coordinator who was going to defensive back, Dino Foligno. He didn't tell him. He read it in the newspaper the next day. So he told me about it. So I wrote the story that, you know, Cutler was going to move. And Jay, who, you know, doesn't have an explosive personality, let me say that. I asked him about it.
He likes to hide behind trees.
Yeah, exactly. So So Woody told me, he goes, you know, look, we have to have the best 20. This was his rationale. We have to have our best 22 football players on the field at all times. We have to have our best 22 athletes on the field at all times. Jay Cutler is one of our best 22 football players and athletes. I don't care if he's a freshman. We got to get him out there. We're not going to put him at quarterback, so we're going to put him at safety. So the offensive coordinator, Norm Cosby, has no idea about this. Steve Crosby, yeah, has no idea about this. And he goes crazy. And he goes to Woody on his knees pleading with him, don't do this. Don't take Cutler away from me. And Woody's convictions weren't real strong. So
right. He
was like, okay. So it never came to fruition.
But had it happened, though, I mean.
Had it happened, Cutler yes. And it was in the safety. Works. And if Crosby hadn't gone to Woody like that, yeah, then Jay was a good enough athlete that he would have gone out there and he'd have played, and he'd have played well.
Was that the year that Woody did the fake punt on his own 10 versus Georgia?
I think it was, yes.
Good Lord.
And, you know, I never criticized Woody for that because I had watched enough Vanderbilt football that I felt exactly like Woody did.
Yeah, but Woody Ball was a different – It was a different type of Vanderbilt.
It was a different
football.
Animal. Yes, it was.
But I know Peyton Manning hated facing Woody Woodenhofer.
No,
will say Woody Woodenhofer had me figured out.
He did. He was a defensive genius. He absolutely was. And he had the style. He had a charisma about him that made you think he could be a head coach. But when he got the job, he told me, he goes, I said, well, what are some of your thoughts? What are some of the things that you worry about, weaknesses? And he said, organizational skills. he literally told me that, and he was right. I mean,
could you imagine him now?
God, well, he passed away.
Well, I know, but like,
oh yeah, he interviewed for another position for another school, and this is what I've been told. The first minute of the interview, he said, "I'll be right back," and he went and did a number two and was gone for like 45 minutes. And they came back and said, all right, I'm ready.
Well, okay. You guys being in radio, one of the greatest things was when he was on the
coach's show.
Yeah, on the coach's show with Joe Fisher, and he says he doesn't give a crap about Kentucky.
Somebody didn't say crap.
They didn't say crap.
Oh, no.
And then they go to break, and Joe says, you can't say that on the radio. And Woody goes, oh, I'm sorry about that. And they come back, and Joe's moved on to something else. And Woody goes, yeah, can I bring something up? I want to apologize for saying, and he said the word again on the radio a while ago.
All right, we got to take a break. You have another Jay Cutler story for us.
Yeah.
That you've teased me last night with, so I can't wait to hear it. So
we'll do that next. He's Mike Organ of the Tennessee and hanging out with us. Chasing Big Joe in for Robbie and Rex Road here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Chasing Big Joe, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. He's Big Joe Dubin, Chase McCabe with you. Mike Organ of the Tennessee and hanging out with us, telling some stories, talking about Nashville. Because how long have you been at the Tennessee?
August will be 39 years.
Wow.
So I've been there 38 and a half.
Wow.
I first met you at the old Club Vita down here. You were Phil Vassar's assistant. And
I was.
Back in the day, and you just started at Tennessee. And that's crazy. Club Vita down here we worked out. Coach Wells will work out there. Chad Brock, the country singer, worked there. You and Phil Vassar hanging out.
It's about a mile away from here. And met Joe and Walt there. And yep. Within 6 months, we're playing semi-pro football together.
That's right.
Further on down the road at the Smyrna Airport is where we would practice.
The Tennessee Generals. Oh, we can do
a whole show on that.
Oh, my God, yes. The Jay Cutler, you got another Jay Cutler story.
Yeah, I get a call from a friend, I guess it was back in the summer, and she says, you have any way of getting in touch with Jay Cutler? And I said, Jay's kind of tough to get in touch with, but yes, I do. And I'll just say Lindsay Nance was doing, she had just left Jay. She was working for Jay. She left Channel 4 to go to work for Jay.
Yeah.
And I didn't know she had just left him, but she was still, you know, they were still close. So I texted her to take care of this situation. One of Jay's cars, it was some type of SUV, had been parked in front of my friend's mother's parents' home for, I want to say 15 or 16 days. And
did he know this lady?
They didn't know him. It was parked right in front of their house. They got the license plate. They ran it by Metro. Metro said, yeah, that owns the Jay Cutler owns that vehicle. So that's all Metro did. And they tried to start tracking him down. And then I called Lindsay. And then I think Lindsay got in touch with Jay. And it's a big mystery as to what happened. My guess is that Jay probably attended a party over that area and parked out front, you know, how you park down the road.
Yeah.
And maybe had a little bit too much to drink, maybe. I don't know.
Caught an Uber. Good for him.
Caught an Uber. Right. Took a ride home with a friend. Woke up the next day. Jay's got so many cars. Jay's a big car guy. You know that. He's got so many cars. Doesn't even think about
That's
this
amazing.
One.
Yeah. Just sat there for weeks.
And so Lindsay texts him and he probably goes, oh, yeah. And he takes an Uber back over.
And gets how do you forget? Car. Well, if you've got 37 cars.
Exactly. You or I probably weren't going to forget our car because we can't go anywhere the next day without it.
Oh, my goodness.
But it's just some SUV. You know, it's not even a nice car. I mean, I'm sure it was a nice SUV, but it just.
Right. Chris Ladd texted in, said he could listen to Woody Woodenhofer stories all day long.
Yeah, and he could probably tell them, too. Woody Woodenhofer stories are fantastic.
I wish I had met him.
Well, I was
all the stories I've heard.
We were at the Boundary one night, me and a couple of my bonehead friends, and then he had all four Super Bowl rings on because he worked for the Steelers. Yep. He was a defensive linebacker.
His linebacker's coach. He was part of the Steel Curtain.
And he just bought, and I'll buy you guys drinks as long as you listen to my story. And I said, all night long, baby.
And he continued to wear his rings when he went to Destin, moved to Destin, and took a job in a toll booth between Fort Walton and Destin.
That's true.
And he would hand people their change, and they'd see that big ring. And
he was there with them.
He was the defensive coordinator.
For a couple. George Perlis was.
Woody took.
79-83.
Woody was part of the steel curtain, but Perlis was. Yeah.
The main guy, yeah. Did you get PTSD covering Vanderbilt sports in the 80s and 90s?
I covered Vanderbilt for 10 years. Larry Woody had covered it for the 10 years before me, and Jimmy Davey had covered it for the 10 years before that. I think that they realized at the time that you can't do it for more than 10 years. I covered 28.
That's your sentence?
Yeah, it is. It's your combat pay. I covered 28 victories in football victories in 10 years.
Oh, my
No
goodness.
Winning seasons, no bowl games, four coaches in 10 years. Is that right?
You know, they had a legit, in 88 with Eric Jones, they had a legitimate Heisman Trophy candidate.
And I did not cover them that year. Woody was still on them back then. I took them over in 93. I had four coaches in 10 years. I had DiNardo, Dauhauer, Woody, and Bobby Johnson.
Dauhauer, what a disaster.
Yep, 2 years. Lasted 2 years, and that was a year too long. It was 2 years too
also,
long.
Also, Wisenhunt was on that staff.
Wisenhunt was a tight ends coach on that staff. Yes, he was.
So sorry you had to go through all that.
Did not – basketball, didn't go to the NCAA tournament. I only covered basketball for 5 years because Jimmy Davies stayed on as the basketball beat writer.
Did you have Jan Van Bredekoff?
I had Jan. I had Jan, and then I had Kevin's first 2 years.
Okay. But you went to the Final Four with the lady – well, they're not the Lady Doors.
No,
women's team.
Jimmy was still covering when they went to
damn it,
the
you didn't
Final
do
Four.
Anything fun?
I went
with Vanderbilt.
Baseball?
I went to baseball.
We did. I got a great story about baseball. I'll be fast. We didn't do anything with baseball because there was zero interest in baseball. Roy Mubern had been there. He kept them out of trouble, but they just would go 500 every year. So I'm leaving spring football practice one day, and I run into Todd Turner, who's the athletics director, in the parking lot. And we're talking, and I go, well, you been up to it? And he goes, oh, hey, I got something for you. And I said, what? And he goes, I've hired a new baseball coach. And I said, oh, really? And I said, well, I'm going back to the office to write some notes on this football practice. Who is it? So he tells me that it's this guy named Tim Corbin, and he's an assistant at
Clemson.
So I don't jot it down. So I get back to the office, and I write my note story from football, and my editor sends it back and says, hey, we need another 3 or 4 inches for this story. You got anything else? And I said, no, I really don't. Then I go, wait a minute. Todd Turner told me he hired a new baseball coach. And I said, but I can't remember who it was. Luckily, I did remember Clemson. And we had a Clemson sports media guide in the office. So I grabbed the media guide, and I thought, maybe if I thumb through here and see him, you know, a picture of him, it'll ring a bell. And it did. And I said, Tim Corbin, this is it. So I wrote 3 inches on the hiring of Tim Corbin.
Goodness.
And that's how we announced that Tim Corbin had been hired at Vanderbilt.
Isn't that crazy? Because I think the evolution you see with Vanderbilt baseball, nobody – went nobody.
And now everybody knows his name.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Usually it's a competitive thing when a coach gets hired, and because the banner was still around back then, the National Banner, and you'd be eager to beat the banner and
watching
the
Greg
TV
Pope
stations
your
and
stories.
Radio. Yeah. And and here it was, and it was just an afterthought, and barely an afterthought.
Amazing.
That's amazing.
Thank you, brother. This is great, man. You're the best.
Yeah, fun to be on here. Time flies by with you guys.
It sure does. He's Mike Organ of the Tennessean, 39 years at the paper. And you can follow him on Twitter, Mike Organ Writer, correct?
Mike Organ Writer.
Yep.
Up on M-O-N-W.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
On X.
There we go.
On X. Formerly Twitter.
Coming up next, we'll talk more Titans with Teron Davenport, ESPN. Chase and Big Joe in for Robbie and Rex Road today, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.